Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. I'm Aaron Dykes. This is the InfoWars Nightly News. Today is Tuesday, May 15th, 2012.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, Bilderberg 2012. Meet the new face of treason as we report on the Bilderbergers' plan to hack the U.S. elections. Plus, Henry Kissinger gets a taste of his own tyranny as he is searched by unwitting TSA agents. Then, sound cannons to be used in Chicago to pacify the masses? All this and more coming up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And of course, we also have an exclusive interview with Yuri Maison coming up tonight on how the World Bank is using loans as leverage to force population control measures on people. Now, turning to the Bilderberg Conference coming up in just a few weeks in Chantilly, Virginia, at their 2012 conference this year, Bilderberg's scheme to save the euro. Paul Joseph Watson writes that the globalists fear Greece could exit the single currency and stage a miraculous economic recovery. The Bilderberg group is terrified that Greece's potential exit from the eurozone could lead to a dramatic economic recovery and provide a template for other countries to follow suit, threatening to torpedo the euro single currency and entire agenda for the European superstate. And of course, Iceland was an early template for the recovery because they said no to the bankers' debt, and they've basically already gotten themselves out of at least the worst of the financial crisis. Other countries like Ireland are talking about following suit, and they really don't want to be embarrassed here. You had the head of the Bilderberg Group, the steering committee chairman, Etienne Davignon, in 2009, bragging about how the meeting brought together the Euro project in the first place, really going back to the 50s, but especially in the early 90s, and now it is disastrously unraveling, and they don't want a country like Greece, A, to buck the austerity measures that would help them control the population, B, to embarrass their Bilderberg technocrats who've been taken over and put in without a vote, and C, they don't want them to lead the way for other European countries to reestablish their sovereignty, to avoid the banker debt, and to go independent rogue and create their whole domino scheme and allow out to collapse in a bad way. We'll keep an eye on what happens there. We're going to bring you more Bilderberg information, too, at the end of this broadcast. We've got a special presentation that will come together. But first, Chicago cops buy sound cannon to provide protesters with public safety messages, and police there have spent over $1 million on riot equipment, including purchasing a controversial LRAD long-range acoustic device, sound cannon designed to cause extreme pain to those in its path. Now, we've seen this at the Pittsburgh G20 meeting. We saw it at the Toronto G20 meeting. And we've seen it at other recent globalist meetings. While all these cretins get together to jam another lousy globalist deal on us, that's only going to put us in worse positions in the global economy and put more restraints on the population. They also want it to be a police state show measure, play with all their new toys, and of course legitimize using these less lethal devices on other countries they're at war with. Yes, they believe if they can use it on the U.S. population first, they could use it anywhere, and they want to make sure that in this age of great democracy, nobody in the streets with a voice can actually be heard, and they don't want to encourage any types of Occupy movements. Not in Chicago, not during that big lockdown. That's coming up next week. We're going to see what happens. Meanwhile, evidence TSA is a mindless machine. Henry Kissinger gets a pat down. We haven't seen the pictures yet, but it has been reported he was sent through TSA security without much of his own security keeping him from being pat down, and that he got the full Monty. You know, the word on the streets, he kind of likes it too. Anyway, perhaps in an ideal world, it would be good for our leaders to be held to the same standards as the populace, but with such a runaway police state, invasive, constitution-destroying and violating measure, well, I'm not even in favor of old Kissinger getting the pat-down at the airport. If they want to do it after he's being arrested and put on treason for trial, that's a different story. The U.S. and Canada are implementing beyond-the-border perimeter security initiatives. This has been going on for months, but it's gotten very little play. Dana Gabrielle, who wrote this report, has been following the issue for months, for years, for a long time. And this is a beyond-the-border pact to more closely merge Canada with the United States. They're now allowing border enforcement, law enforcement people to share data across borders. They, for instance, have given Homeland Security all of Canadians' passenger data, even if they don't travel through the United States. Furthermore, they're ratcheting up the trusted traveler programs, the use of biometrics at border crossing checkpoints and other track points, and they're just overall merging the two systems, allowing a fusion not just of police and military, but of different nations as they merge us into the larger North American Union. And regulatory czar Cass Sunstein, among others, had a big part in that. The U.S. and Canada are also scheduled to deploy a land-based version of the ShipRider program at some point this summer as part of the security perimeter deal. Both countries will implement two next-generation pilot projects to create integrated teams in areas such as intelligence and criminal investigations, and an intelligence-led uniform presence between points of entry. Attorney General Eric Holder, an upstanding man, revealed plans that would allow law enforcement officers to operate on both sides of the border, announcing the creation of NextGen with cross-designated officers allowing blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they just want to clamp down on all that info. We'll keep an eye on that as it continues to develop. They're also using that plan to harmonize GMO regulations and force it on Canada. We're going to discuss this in greater detail with Yuri Masson later in the program. However, the UN and World Bank strangle sovereign nations into accepting global population reduction dictates. And what is this? It's World Bank loans with that backing from the policy set by the United Nations Fund for Population Activities and other branches that control population, deal with environment. And they're saying now to nations, especially in the developing world, that if you want those loans, you're going to first meet those population reduction goals. And this is looking forward. They've done this stuff in decades past. It's been a scandal. But now in their current report for the year 2010, which looks forward to the year 2015, it explains what they're trying to accomplish and how. It's very similar to the schemes they use through the IMF to control third world and developing nations, seize control of those resources, turn it over to mainly Western-backed corporations, and exploit and keep down the population, all under the promise of free trade, giving those countries jobs and otherwise uplifting them. It doesn't. We know the strings are very harmful. The devil's in the details. We know that. You heard about Kony 2012. That itself was months after Obama began his rather covert invasion of Africa to legitimize the AFRICOM mission to seize oil and other assets in Central Africa in particular, and to ratchet up public support for humanitarian crises here, certain causes here. We know that Kony's a leader who hasn't been seen in more than 5 years. He's got kind of a rogue army. Yes, they're a problem. Nothing compared to the outright genocidal dictators in Africa and all over the world. With that said, Uganda displays a captive Kony lieutenant, so they now have a little prize, a little trophy in their hunt for the Lord's Resistance Army. Radhika Kumaswamy, a UN Special Representative for Children in Armed Conflict, called on Ugandan authorities Monday not to apply amnesty, but instead to bring back Akelem to justice. The arrest and subsequent prosecution of Akelem would send a strong message to the LRA leadership that they will be held accountable for their actions. Of course, they want to hold them accountable in the International Criminal Court set up by George Soros, which really hasn't done anything yet. They're trying to legitimize that use, make it a big splash, which, by the way, does not apply to the United States or most of the other Western countries. It's only to go after showpieces in Africa, little dictators they can brand as bad guys, but who nobody really knows who they are or what their impact has been. And all the Ugandans, by the way, said the whole Kony thing was a bad joke. Meanwhile, in close by South Sudan, of course, a country that split just recently in the past couple of years, now there's a North Sudan and a South Sudan, former U.S. official calls for arming the army. And we've rearranged the story here because our researchers, John Bounds and others, have really realized that they put as a footnote what seems to be on the surface the main reason for taking over interest in these countries. South Sudan briefly seized the Heglil oil field inside South Kordofan, which is vital to Sudan's economy because it produces almost half of the country's output of 115,000 barrels per day. That led to last January when President Barack Obama added South Sudan to the list of countries eligible to buy weapons from the U.S., leading to the former U.S. official said that the proposition he's making would create a stalemate and get the North back to the negotiating table. If the U.S. provides material, the South can end the North's bombing campaign. Most North Air Force pilots are mercenaries. If they start talking heavy losses, they will leave Sudan quickly. And of course, the Sudan story is important, not just because it's part of the same general region of Africa where AFRICOM is trying to take over, but because it's part of the same PSYOP. While Angelina Jolie and others were blah, blah, blahing about Kony 2012, you had actors like George Clooney and the State Department's John Prendergast going to South Sudan, showing dead people there, interviewing victims and sympathetic figures, all to call for this U.S. and Western-backed military presence in Sudan, which we see has a lot to do with the oil fields there. So just something to keep in mind when you're trying to do something humanitarian that actually leads to more war, like giving Obama the Nobel Peace Prize before he exacerbates conflict. We turn now to the quote of the day. It is from James Warburg, one of the founders of the Federal Reserve, a very important family. Back in 1950, he said, "We will have a world government, whether you like it or not. The only question is whether that government will be achieved by conquest or consent." And that was before the U.S. Senate, a very brazen statement indeed, but he's backed by some powerful criminals. We'll be back after this with even more on Bilderberg and the important, deadly Facebook connection. They are trying to hack our country, our elections, and more. Stay tuned. We'll have tech news on the other side. InfoWars Nightly News.
Have you been to InfoWarsShop.com lately? Express your inner patriot with these brand new InfoWars t-shirts. Say it loud with the InfoWars bullhorn shirt. Or educate the sheeple with the Bill of Rights shirt. Grope the public's mind with the TSA shirt. And with this shirt, you can let the dark side know of the Rebel Alliance's power. All available at InfoWarsShop.com.
Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure. And it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
We are back on the InfoWars Nightly News, and now for a little technology news. First, scientists have built a billion-dollar city where no one will live. It's in New Mexico, and it's basically a smart city for research scientists to look at things from intelligent traffic systems to next-generation wireless networks to automated washing machines, self-flushing toilets, and on and on. And you've heard about how they're going to use toasters to spy on you, your own television to spy on you. They're already using GPS and your car's black box technology to spy on you. Cell phones are basically spy tools, double-edged swords, of course, though. And all this is just going to be further tested in a city that's set to look like something out of the Jetsons, but with even fewer people in it. That's interesting. Also, a light-powered bionic eye has been invented to help restore sight. These are some of the good things they could use technology for, but of course, control is usually at the top of their list. Retinal implants stimulate nerves in the back of the eye, which has helped some patients to see. Early results of a trial in the UK mean two men have gone from being totally blind to being able to perceive light and even some shapes. However, a fitting a chip behind the retina requires a battery fitted behind the ear and a cable to join the two together. I'm sure they're looking at ways to eliminate that hang-up. Also, in Detroit, not really a technology news, but an anti-gun news, a worker in Wayne County simply found a gun in the yard they were working at. It turned out to be stolen, and he's the one who got in trouble and fired from his job because the job didn't have a policy on what to do if he found a gun. They had a policy about not bringing guns, but this was totally different. In an area that's almost totally disarmed, they've got a victim victim freakout mode, I guess. And even if there's murders in Detroit and Wayne County, you can't expect the police to show up for hours, sometimes not till the next day. They've really got things backwards there. No wonder it's leading really the country for falling apart economically. But back to the Bilderberg topic, increasingly all the things we see on the internet, the positive sides of the revolution, the attempts to crack down, all seem to be spiraling around the group of elites that meet each year in a new location under their secret names in fancy five-star hotels. And it's part of, we see more and more, a larger web of control through groups like Facebook and other big tech people. So many of them have started attending this conference. And kind of nexusing with that, we have the article today from our contributor A.M. Freyed, Liars or Genius? Gaga, Zuckerberg, and Obama groomed from childhood for their roles. And this is all on the heels of Facebook launching its IPO this week. They are estimating they're going to be valued at over $100 billion. Lady Gaga went to Geek Camp 2. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, Google's Sergey Brin are all alumni of the Center for Talented Youth at Johns Hopkins University. Similar programs also take place, such as the Duke Talent Identification Program and others. It's kind of a mix of people with gifts for mathematical, musical, technical things, and people who just have important elite family members and how they prepare them for their role in the New World Order. In particular, this is interesting with Zuckerberg. A.M. Freyed writes, it's likely these are all lies of sorts. Zuckerberg is no genius mogul, and Facebook is more a U.S. intelligence asset than a functioning business. It's a simple formula. The power elite that wants to run the world has increasingly integrated a seamless network of testing throughout the web to help develop and identify top human youngsters, those who are symbolically facile, even verbally adept, without the additional burden of deep thinking. That's right. They want to control their little pet geniuses. It's a kind of organized crime approach to the cultivating of talent. After making their selections, elite handlers began to make the pitch. The quid pro quo is surely obvious, and monarch programs and other forms of mind control are not necessary. Most, like Zuckerberg, acquiesce willingly and do whatever is required. Of course, many of these young people mature late in mathematics. Capability is not the only kind of creativity they hold. This is not an issue to the top elites. They apparently wish to select for numerical facilities, music, language, math skills, because the owners of such talents are more likely to be linear in their thought rather than holistic thinkers. The idea is to present geniuses with outward dazzling skills, but little in the way of insight or determination to investigate the realities of the larger picture. And that larger picture is coming together when you begin to study who is it that attends the Bilderberg meeting? What is their agenda? What are their related agendas? What are their conflicts of interest? We're going to get into some of that today. And throughout it, they're going to be revealing just some of the technical people who've attended Bilderberg just over the past few years. Bill Gates, probably the most notable, the already most deeply steeped in evil. But others are being brought onto this platform. And what really is at Bilderberg, just the larger cartel. That's really what they are. There's the one company. They include the NSA. They include the CIA. They include all the political fronts. And they control a great deal of the industry, the technical stuff, and a whole lot more. Now, we've heard this week about how a judge refuses to reveal the ties between the NSA and Google. We're not supposed to know that they're spying on us or that they're working together or that Google was basically launched as a front for the NSA, CIA, and related interests. But that's all coming out. And you see Eric Schmidt attending annually at Bilderberg. He got confronted last year. And it's kind of funny, too. He thought that people wouldn't know how to speak English just because they're in Europe, but they did. He got shouted at. He didn't like it. They even had some of the videos pulled from YouTube of people confronting Eric Schmidt and the other Bilderberg attendees who got caught walking down the sidewalk. Very interesting. But back to Facebook. This week, they're in the news, of course, because the IPO is about to happen. They're about to be declared as a $100 billion company, really topping anything Bill Gates did or any of these other newfound billionaires, because it's part of that larger myth of wealth. Those who have the wealth are supposedly in control. Therefore, they associate with the elite. Therefore, they pull the strings. Therefore, it's not surprising to find them influencing this and that in social media and online and our new reality, what's considered the mainstream culture they're always trying to sell. And so you see Eduardo Saverin, wanting to leave the country, wanting to renounce his citizenship, but of course cash in on that IPO. Now, this guy Eduardo Saverin was the initial funder for Facebook when it was only tens of thousands of dollars. He was at Harvard, ran with Zuckerberg and the other founders who were all roommates there, but they didn't really like his style and they tried to push him out of the company and snag some of his different holdings, but he got it back through a lawsuit and now he has the money. But there's an interesting clip I want to play here from the movie The Social Network that'll tie us to our main focus in this piece, which is Sean Parker, the first president of Facebook, also the first launcher of Napster, which disrupted the web, and someone who looks to be an overall agent of disruption. Let's roll that clip right now.
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool?
You?
$1 billion. So $1 billion, that's what's cool. When Eduardo Saverin wanted to sell off the company for a little over $1 million, people like Sean Parker convinced them to keep going forward and try to make Facebook a truly huge company. Now, the real truth is these people are just fronts for larger entities. We've seen in the past how the Rockefeller Corporation and other big entities had to break up Standard Oil, had to break up AT&T, had to break up IBM, and other true monopolies of the early part of the 20th century. They spun them, sold them, put them in side companies, but it turned out that all along, control was basically with the same important people. And you see at the same time how John D. Rockefeller was himself an icon for that robber baron wealth of the early part of the 20th century. In the 21st century, in the rise of technology and the takeover of operating systems, Bill Gates was a major icon for that. And you see how much he has pushed the New World Order agenda himself, meeting very often at Bilderberg meetings along with his father and his wife and other counterparts of Microsoft and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But now that too has to grow. Companies like Facebook have to transplant the success of Microsoft. They have to top what's already been done. So now it has to be a $100 billion company. What does that money really mean? What's it based in? It doesn't matter, but they're going to be selling these new Silicon Valley figures as our saviors, as the rightful elites to control things. And that's why you see people like Sean Parker, the founders, including Zuckerberg of Facebook, being glorified, movies made about them. Again, you just saw the clip from The Social Network where he says $1 million isn't cool, $1 billion, that's what's cool. But actually he said $1 billion isn't cool. Sean Parker, $1 billion isn't cool. In the Huffington Post, one of the film's sequences involves the Parker character telling the young Facebook co-founders, $1 million isn't cool, you know what's cool, $1 billion. The real life Parker has a different take on wealth. It's not cool, he said, of $1 billion. I think being a wealthy member of the establishment is the antithesis of cool. He added, saying being a counterculture revolutionary is cool. So the extent that you're made $1 billion, you've probably become uncool. Well, Sean Parker, you become uncool. We have you on video attending Bilderberg in 2010, giving the victory sign, so cool, like $1 billion cool. Alex found out when I was telling him about some of the research that I do every year on Bilderberg, looking up members from the attendees list, finding out what they're up to lately. And he realized he met Sean Parker just a few months ago at a party during the South by Southwest meeting, and how crazy he was, how strange, and seemed hype up on something. We don't know what was going on. He was juggling apples and talking intently in people's faces and acting real weird, and a bunch of hangers-on were gloating about his billions and how he was about to cash in for even more when the IPO of Facebook went through. And it's just all very strange, the worship around this guy who didn't like his portrayal in The Social Network as a drug-induced playboy who's kind of wielding these new technologies. And yet, when Alex met him at the party, it really seemed like maybe he did fit this kind of super egotistical character, really reveling in his connections and wealth and total trendiness. He was there at South by Southwest appearing with Al Gore, talking about how soap is bad and how they have to hack democracy and use social media to take over voting. And they've got all these new companies. We're about to get to that. But this guy has really made himself involved, and particularly in the Bilderberg, through his connection with Peter Thiel, who's now on the Bilderberg Steering Committee and has invited so many of the founders of Facebook and other key technology companies to that elite summit. Let's roll some of those members right now. And you see just some of the invitees from the 2011 list there in detail, Craig J. Mundy, who's the chief research and strategy officer for Microsoft. But let's go back to the where they show their names and faces, and we can talk about the gathering they brought together to discuss things like the future of privacy on the internet, the future of cybersecurity. There's Peter Thiel. He runs Clarium Capital. He was also the first founder of PayPal and their CEO, and he was the first major funder of Facebook. He provided the first $500,000 that would eventually turn Facebook into a multi-billion dollar company. Next, we have Mark Zuckerberg. He and his sister were rumored to attend the Bilderberg meeting last year in St. Moritz. We can't confirm that directly, but the New American did write on the topic and said they had a meeting basically about how they learned to love the end of privacy, to accept all the NSA backdoors to Facebook and the other super technology. And you remember, it was only in the past months where it turned out Zuckerberg had referred to the early Facebook members as dumb effers for giving all their data away. And of course, he was going to use that data. You saw people like Eric Schmidt laughing about how you shouldn't do anything on the internet you don't want to do in public, and on and on. And his sister has also made a lot of outspoken comments about what a joke privacy was. And apparently they had a big confab at Bilderberg last year over the Facebook issue in particular and the future of online privacy. And it makes a lot of sense because they had at least four or five funders or key members or founders of Facebook there. We don't know if the Zuckerberg family themselves showed up, but it would certainly fit with the other information. But we know other people showed up and were on their official list. Of course, each year there are many people not on the official list. This is Chris Hughes, a co-founder of Facebook, and he was also credited as being the kid who made Obama president. How? Through social media. And we're about to get even more into that, but he helped get the list together in a 21st century high-tech way to really connect with people who might vote for the president, who might raise money for him, or who might just spread the trendy word about him. You also saw Jeff Bezos. He's the CEO of Amazon. He was at Bilderberg last year. He's running, of course, with the Peter Thiel crowd because Peter Thiel runs Clarium Capital. He runs Sequoia Capital. They run the Founders Fund. All these are important hedge fund and other funding mechanisms that decide which projects live and which projects die, which projects are going to become a multi-billion dollar company and which projects are just going to be prototypes for someone else to take over. You really see that going on Silicon Valley now, and they make up basically about 20% of the NASDAQ index, and that means a lot of our GDP, but it's more than just dollars. It's the what is going to be the reach of social media? How impactful will they be on socially engineering society, something the elites have been working on for over 100 years. Let's go back to that list and finish off the attendees. You also saw the CEO of LinkedIn, who is also one of the Facebook founders. His name is Reid Hoffman. And then after that, you have, I think there's one other guy in there. But the point is, all these tech geeks came together at Bilderberg. The question is why. And of course, Sean Parker of Napster, the first president of Facebook, he wasn't there last year, but the past year. The point is, they're there every year. Again, Peter Thiel is on the steering committee of Bilderberg and runs a lot of the finance operations of Silicon Valley. Such an important connection there. But it gets even more interesting because Sean Parker calls himself a disruptor. Forbes has the headline, Sean Parker, Agent of Disruption. Who is he? He is basically an early teen genius who learned to hack when he was just 14, 15 some odd years old, started his own companies while he was still in high school, got around some of the high school requirements so he could start doing some of his online money making. And then in Virginia, where he went to high school at none other than Chantilly High School, right over there where the Bilderberg meeting's about to be, he won the state computer science fair for developing a web crawler and was recruited by the CIA at age 16. Sean Parker, CIA, Agent of Disruption. And so as all this stuff with privacy shapes, you've got also attendees at the Bilderberg meeting, including Christine Varney, the former Obama U.S. Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust Division, now working for the tech companies to guard privacy. You've got Google in an antitrust probe, and all this stuff is building through a crescendo while Sean Parker says it's time to disrupt the elections. He says defeating SOPA was the nerd spring, the thing him and Al Gore called for at South by Southwest and in the months previous leading up to it, using the name playing off of the Arab Spring. You've got headlines here like Votison, social voting ready to disrupt the 2012 presidential election. You've got headlines like Sean Parker, this election, social media will determine the outcome. And it all adds together. You've got Sean Parker in this article, five interesting things Sean Parker said yesterday. He says, politics, for me, is the most obvious area to be disrupted by the web. Campaigns themselves and all forms of special interest groups and PACs are driven by huge amounts of cash. If you're a PAC, you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to mobilize single-issue voters. Taking money out of politics with campaigns is possible through social media. Like with all the other groups, they're spending a fortune basically for maintaining a mailing list, and that can be done basically for free using online tools. There's huge potential for disruption. So there he is using the term disruption in the context of steering the elections, of hacking the elections through social media. And they're all meeting at Bilderberg, especially last year, but in the years to come. We'll see how many of them show up this year. Now, this entity right here, Votison, it's one of their little side projects. It connects back to Peter Thiel. It connects back to Sean Parker. It connects back to Chris Hughes and, of course, other allies and, of course, many celebrities. They're all funded by the same basic groups, Clarium Capital, Sequoia, and especially the Founders Fund, which Sean Parker now heads. Chris Hughes, who's one of the key Facebook co-founders, was credited in 2008 with helping to get President Obama elected. Here's the headline right here, how Chris Hughes helped launch Facebook and the Barack Obama campaign. And it goes on about what a great supporter Obama was, he was, but especially how he used social media, and in particular the site mybarackobama.com, to connect supporters and spread support and basically get the community organizing going on. But Peter Thiel, as you know, has been reported as a major libertarian thinker and a supporter of Ron Paul. Why would someone like Peter Thiel, who goes to the Bilderberg meeting every year, back someone like Ron Paul, who wants to break down the system? Well, look at the fact that Ron Paul has the only true viral internet campaign. That's the only candidate. You don't see a viral campaign for Newt Gingrich. You don't see it for Romney. You see it to a certain extent for Obama, but a lot of that is AstroTurf. Ron Paul has the true body of supporters, and what do they want? They want that data. They want to back people like Ron Paul so they could steer the social media data. They want to run it through all their sites from LinkedIn to Facebook and on, and they want to steer it, study it, and learn how they can use it in the future to truly hack elections. We're not talking about voting machine fraud, although that's still on the table. We're talking about steering the supporters to vote for who the system wants you to vote for. Ron Paul's an experiment. They're not concerned about the candidates in this cycle in particular. They're concerned about latching on to the proper trends for the real future. And so after he did Napster, but before he got to the Facebook and cybersecurity elements, he also had the company Plaxo, which was basically a viral online address book that worked alongside of in companionship with Microsoft's Outlook. And according to what I read about it, it basically would download onto users' computers, steal their contacts, and contact all those people to try to get them to join the network. Now, this tech company didn't really take off, and Sean Parker got kicked out of it, but they used the basis for the technology in the future successful companies, and that's just what they do. They seed all these companies, they see what grows, and they use the lessons they learn to build the projects that actually take off. And again, they're all front men for the larger cartel system that includes the NSA mechanisms and all the rest of it. They're running things, and they're using these tech geeks as the new heroes of wealth and power for this new age, and we must refuse them. You saw how cool Sean Parker thinks he is, not only with his billions, but waving to people from the Bilderberg car, really thinks he's made it. He's just another tool of the system. You don't have that coolness once you sell out to the cartel, Sean Parker. We'll be back after this with Yuri Masson and more on the World Bank's disgusting population control coercive methods after this.
Have you been to InfoWarsShop.com lately? Express your inner patriot with these brand new InfoWars t-shirts. Say it loud with the InfoWars bullhorn shirt. Or educate the sheeple with the Bill of Rights shirt. Grope the public's mind with the TSA shirt. And with this shirt, you can let the dark side know of the Rebel Alliance's power. All available at InfoWarsShop.com.
Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure. And it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
And we are back from break. We're going to get more into depth on how the World Bank, the United Nations, and other global entities use their strings, use their economic helpfulness to help reduce the population and force countries to submit to their ulterior motives. Joining us now is a frequent contributor to InfoWars, Jurian Masson. He has a new website, explosivereports.com, where you can find a great deal of his past works. Thanks for joining us, Jurian.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell us about this article today.
Well, I just covered the World Bank, put out two separate reports. In those reports, they state and admit that they extend lendings and withdraw lendings on the basis of population reduction dictates being implemented in those countries. So if a country, for example, Yemen or Niger, refuses to implement the World Bank's population dictates, they just withdraw lending to those countries. So that's a pretty amazing thing, I thought.
Yeah, it's important in a number of respects. I mean, first of all, we've had John Perkins on the program talking about the global hitman. He worked for the IMF and other related entities, and we've really seen how they've imposed their will on the third world in terms of getting a hold of resources, putting in certain economic conditions, making the debt tied to the nation following the global program they want to put them on. But it's especially personal, especially violating when they tie that to the life and death of individuals, when they say who can live or die has to do with who's going to receive that money.
Right. And it's all being done. Well, you're all voluntarily committed to this program. You can all volunteer for this. It's not mandatory, but actually it is, because these third world countries are completely dependent on these fundings. So it's a very smart way from their dark point of view to implement this this kind of program.
Yeah, and of course, you dig up a lot of old documents. You cover, for instance, Rockefeller Foundation documents from the 60s and on. But this is a current document. It was published in 2010, only 2 years ago, and it was looking forward all the way to the year 2015. So it's not as if they used to be part of eugenics and are giving it up. They're clearly moving this program forward, figuring out how to advance it for the certain countries. Now, we saw Kissinger in the 70s when he was national security advisor to Gerald Ford, right on the heels of the Nixon administration, declaring food as a weapon. And I know we have some of those quotes here now. And they really tried to tie then national security of the United States to the burgeoning populations in key third world countries. Secondly, they tried to tie food aid to a number of countries, particularly those that are starving, to the population reduction. And that's what they mean by food as a weapon, that they are going to withhold rations if the country doesn't cut the population. It's sort of a dire trade-off of the most basic just terrible positions. I mean, starving people, basically, if they don't cut their numbers. What do you think about that?
Well, they did it in Iraq. It's the famous oil for food or food for oil program. That was a clear-cut example to pursue their geopolitical program. And Kissinger is, of course, on the forefront of this. And he used that in that National Security State Memorandum 200. Again, this World Bank also talks about a global consensus. So it's not just one country or one region. It's a global consensus. And that's been admitted by not only the World Bank, but also by the head of the World Bank in the 1980s, I should say, which is Klaus Töpfer, also a Bilderberg attendee. And he was also an executive director to the United Nations Environmental Program. And he admitted in 2000 that an international consensus on worldwide population control is has been established and is active right now. He gave this speech in Berlin, and he stated, "Most people and policymakers, and I quote, are unaware that there is an international consensus that grounds population policy in human rights and development."
Yeah, and it's important to note that a lot of these countries get very angry about the West, rather heavy-handed population control methodologies. So much of it is Rockefeller family-led and so forth and so on. But you see places like India and Pakistan, where we've got covert drone warfare, covert war spilling over from Afghanistan, all on the Al-Qaeda pretext. At the same time, Bill Gates and his friends are pushing vaccines in the country, and it's harming, in some cases, tens of thousands of children. And a lot of the key experts in those countries are outraged about it. You see the same thing in countries in Africa and Latin America as well. What have you found on that front?
Well, not too much, but I know this is going on, of course. You got all these different pieces of the puzzle, you should say, of this scientific dictatorship. That's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, of course, and the Rockefeller Foundation. They all work in unison in a global consensus to make this possible. So they use food as a weapon. They use vaccines as a soft kill weapon. And of course, they use media as a brainwashing weapon, and they use UNESCO, or UNESCO uses them, as a way to brainwash the youth from a very, very early age on to concepts and desensitizing them to concepts such as reproductive health, which in essence means abortions, and making it okay for, even to the youngest of people. So that's a crime outright.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I want to pull up a series of quotes here to show how long this part of the agenda has been going on. Again, here we're talking about the World Bank and the United Nations Population Fund, talking about tying the loans to these sovereign countries through the population control mechanism. You see this going all the way back to the 40s and 50s with Bertrand Russell. So he wrote then in The Impact of Science on Society, 1953, about the International Food Authority he wanted to create. He said, to deal with the problem of increasing population and decreasing food supplies, it will be necessary to find ways of preventing an increase of world population. If this is to be done other than by war, pestilence, and famine, it will demand a powerful international authority. This authority should deal out the world's food to various nations in proportion to their population. If any nation subsequently increased its population, it should not on that account receive any more food. The motive for not increasing population will therefore be very compelling. And you see this again in the 70s with Kissinger. We just talked about his food as a weapon quotes. But you also see it in Ecoscience, the book by White House advisor John P. Holdren and Ehrlich. They talked about the planetary regime rather than the international authority. Same thing. Perhaps those agencies, combined with the United Nations Environmental Program and the United Nations Population Agencies, might be eventually developed into a planetary regime, a sort of international superagency for population, resources, and environment. Such a comprehensive planetary regime could control the development, administration, conservation, and distribution of all natural resources, including all food on the international market. The planetary regime might be given responsibility for determining the optimum population for the world for each region and arbitrating the various countries' shares within the regional limits. So that's really the same basic concept we're talking about here. Here it's tied under the loan and the lending agreements and all the strings that we've seen, again, in these IMF-controlled countries. But here the World Bank is using, again, the population as the primary carrot, the lure on the stick.
Right. And you have this this quote by the planetary regime. There are many words for that, there is a global consensus. So that's just written and it's documented. When we look at this World Bank report, they actually say that this their strategy and the consensus can be best achieved by a coordinated strategy implemented by a visible, strong, and high-level in-country unit with a mandate to design, monitor, and evaluate the effectiveness of the program. So that means in-country units are stationed in third world countries to make sure these depopulation programs will be executed.
It's just crazy. It's brash. It's so written in the language, but they know people aren't reading these reports. They're still paying attention, even if they're reading internet news, to very superficial stories. But this is all part of the deep research, and you've been doing it for, I don't know how many years now, at least five plus. Tell them about your new website and some of the old archive works you're going to be posted there.
Well, my new website is called explosivereports.com. And I just put it up in the last couple of weeks, so I still have to do a lot of work about have to put a lot of work in that, especially post a lot of my older articles. And I will be posted on the homepage of the website, the featured articles, the most recent ones, which I will also be sending through to InfoWars, of course.
And what's the latest from your perspective on the Bilderberg meeting coming up, the agenda they're going to be pursuing, and some of the key attendees?
Well, the key attendees, besides the usual suspects, let's say, Queen Beatrix and all those, will probably be political figures that will play an important role in the coming months and years in creating a crisis in regards to the euro, and that euro has to be maintained and will be moved into a global currency or a world currency. I think that's the next step they want to do. But it is going to be difficult because the resistance in European countries now, not only Greece, is mounting. So that's good news from the front. So they're what Paul Joseph Watson wrote today, a little bit panicking, I think.
Well, Greece has really been revolting against the austerity measures, saying they're going to buck that debt. And that's the whole purpose of putting those debts on the weaker European countries, so they could try to get them in line the way they've been doing with these developing world countries through the IMF, through the World Bank, and those related programs.
Right. And it was in 1955 that the Bilderberg report, or a transcript of one of the reports, said that the plan for a world currency was already outlined then, in 1955. So that's just being executed now every year again by the Bilderberg group, coordinating all of this. And I think you'll see resistance mounting even further now in the next couple of years, despite what Bilderberg plans to do. So I think that's good news from the front. There's a lot of resistance also in the Netherlands, also in France, also in Germany, against this rising tide of tyranny.
Absolutely. Well, we'll leave it there for today, Yuri Mason. And your website again is explosivereports.com, and you're featured regularly on InfoWars.com. Thanks for joining us. And that's all for tonight's InfoWars Nightly News. We'll be back again tomorrow. Don't forget, you could support us not only monetarily, but by getting the word out. You could do that in one stone's throw by becoming a subscriber at prisonplanet.tv. We have a 15-day free trial going on right now if you want to check it out first. We also have a number of great products that both help get the word out, help educate other people about our mission, and, of course, fund this operation. You can find those at the InfoWars store, URL InfoWarsShop.com. And we have everything from preparedness items to books where you can educate yourself and others, radios to stay in tune, and lots of great books and T-shirts. Farmageddon was a great documentary on the crackdown on really very American farming techniques, traditional stuff, and lots of great T-shirts, Star Wars logos, declarations of freedoms, come and take it, TSA shirts, and a whole lot more. Just check it out for yourself, and please consider supporting us here at the InfoWars Nightly News. That's all for tonight. I'm Aaron Dykes.